I saw this on LinkedIn the other day, and it's so true. Shout out Rich Ortega. He's founder of On the Rock Services. He mentioned that when service companies, the repair companies, are offering these, some people say preventive maintenance. I actually like to say planned maintenance.
Yeah.
That way it's planned out, because you can't technically prevent equipment from breaking down, right, but you can plan for it.
Yeah.
Right. And
that's
so,
a good way to look at it.
And so planned maintenance, if they're offering these different tiered programs of, do you want your equipment?
So, orders up. It's another episode of Kitchen Unconfidential. This is a special interview episode on our series, Where to Spend. Today, we are Norwood,
Javier,
and
Ray.
We are here with Ray from Repairs. And first off, let's start off. You know who we are. Ray, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, first off, thanks for having me. Appreciate
it. Yeah, totally.
It's an honor to be here. Very excited to have a chat today. Awesome. So, my name is Ray. I'm the co-founder, CEO of Repairs, and I was born and raised in the restaurant industry. So I started as a dishwasher as soon as I could walk. Yeah. I came
best
from
spot to start.
Oh, absolutely! It's very humbling. I feel like most people, you know, if they haven't seen how restaurants operate and doing that hard labor behind the scenes, people don't really get it if they haven't been in the industry.
I say it's like one of the most important spots.
Restaurant families that grow up in it, that's where you got to start.
You know,
my mom put me 4 months. You're starting dishwashing.
It's unbelievably rewarding. And so that's the industry that I grew up in. My father, he's a restaurateur. Mm-hmm. So he's built 9 restaurants, family owned, mom and pop shops in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
All nine, yeah. He leveraged the banks growing up, and he had a dream to build his own restaurants. He used to work for Old Man Marriott, so every new hotel that they would open, he would be opening all the restaurants and all the bars for them. So, you know, this is a guy going into his 30s where he wouldn't sleep. You know, he was very in the corporate scene, and then really had a vision and dream to build his own family restaurant. So from the ground up, I grew up in the restaurant industry and never looked back since.
Nice.
So Javi's family restaurant. I know my parents had a spot growing up. And it definitely like raises you, like molds you and sets you on a certain way. So we'll get into the journey, kind of like what took you, got you to your point you're at now. But first, we want to hear what's the elevator pitch for Repairs? What's the explain it, like give people right off the jump so they know what we're going to end up jumping into.
Yeah, so Repairs is essentially the digital superhero for commercial restaurant equipment repair companies.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome.
So companies that fix equipment in your facilities, operators, you know, the fryers, the ovens, the walk-in, coolers, everything.
Okay. Yeah.
Like how'd you say, especially like sounds like you kind of like went up the ladder, kind of like made your bones and stuff. Like how would you say like that's transitioned to like maybe how you approach your business now?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I'd say the biggest thing is serving people and caring about your guests. One of our big values in our restaurants is we actually don't say customers because that infers like a monetary value.
Yeah.
We say guests because we are almost like inviting them into your home.
That's awesome.
And you're treating them with that family and that respect type of atmosphere. And and people feel it too when you walk into the restaurant. And you know what? The food tastes a little better that way too.
Yeah.
Totally.
You know, it's made with love. You don't just eat with your mouth. Yeah. You eat with your eyes. You can hear everything. Yeah.
You can have a great menu, but if the service is not hitting par, you might not go back.
Yeah.
Right? Vice versa. If the service is amazing, but let's say the food is, it's okay, but you know what? They know you by name. Mm-hmm. You bring in a free corkage bottle of wine. You bring 7 of your buddies and all of a sudden you're the man.
Yeah.
You're the person at the spotlight of the table.
Yeah.
And people truly love that experience. So tying back to your question, I'd say serving people has been one of our secret sauces of why Repairs is
that's
grown.
Super interesting to hear. Like turning what would be just a traditional business to be able to give their customer base that it's my favorite restaurant kind of like experience.
Yeah.
It's such a way to like get that return business and keep a long-term customer. Mm-hmm. Like that, I think a lot of people that haven't been in the service industry like that, like just don't have the, it's not in their bag of tricks to even like pull out. And so I think that's a really interesting, like a kind of like carryover from your restaurant experience into the business world.
To your point, building off that, the, anyone who's watching this podcast, right? When they think of software, they can think of frustration. They could think of change. They could think of, oh, are my employees going to adopt to this new software, right? That's one of the biggest challenges. Yeah. Like, are they actually going to use what I buy? And can I even afford this software in the first place, right? But when you really break it down, we are from the restaurant industry. So we speak the language. We understand
the
how they feel.
Yep.
We understand what type of service they expect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so we don't see ourselves as just a bunch of software people.
Yeah.
Right. You know, we are from the industry and we're building for the industry because we're from the industry.
Yeah, totally. I think, and that's a big thing we try to do is like try to explain those downroad costs and stuff and give the people at home and listening and everything a bigger picture and the more meta, like kind of spaced out look that maybe in the moment working they don't see. And so we talk about like staffing and the importance of training to retain staff and to explain like, hey, if you can keep the same people, it's worth paying them a dollar or two more because here's the actual cost of retraining and missing your consistency. And so like you said, 3 to 5% of their overall yearly budget is going into repairs. So if you look at that and you're like, well, I'm making a 4% margin, I'm making 6% margin or something like that, and I can add 1% by taking care of my equipment and using a service like you guys make sure everything's streamlined as possible and you're getting ahead of these problems. It just shows like you can show financially. You can be like, all right, here's, you want that 1%. Here's where it can come from. It's got to kind of go. Javier's got this a really good pinning analogy. If you
Yeah. Like every time I would hire somebody and it was taught to me from somebody else, but I would hire someone and they'd see me pull up in my new car or see my house. And then they would be like, oh my gosh, this guy's making money. And I would have to sit down and go, okay, look, this isn't paying for any of this. Like, here's 100 pennies. Here's 100 pennies. Let's break down, you know, this is 30 pennies go to labor, 30 pennies went to food. This, I break it all down to like 9 pennies left on the table. I'm like, and if we're nailing it, doing everything right, that's what I get to keep. And that's not even, you guys see what I, is on top of what I add to this business and I keep growing. So
pennies on a dollar.
Pennies on a dollar. And it comes down to tech is the last thing people can kind of go to, like the last frontier that people can go to squeeze another percent or two. You can't do it anymore with food and labor just skyrocketing, rents skyrocketing. There's nothing you can really control anymore. And since you don't have that control, you got to dump it all into what kind of technology can help me figure my business out and squeeze another percent or two. Like, and for you to, that's a huge percent. I didn't even, I didn't even really think about that.
Those are real numbers.
Yeah. Those are real numbers that people are spending. And I would blow until, so my refrigeration guy, after I'd been using him for 3 locations, he was retiring and he would always take my calls, come in and put a new compressor in and service my equipment. But when he was retiring, he pulled me aside and said, I can't service your equipment anymore. You're a great guy. Let me talk to you about, and it was about maintenance on a monthly, weekly basis. Here's what you need to do. I set it up after that. I never called anyone after that. I was like, oh, man. He was paying his way, but I'm like, he left me with the golden nugget in how to maintain all my equipment. And then I realized my employees don't care about any about my equipment. That's one thing I left off the table. Care about my customers, care about this, care about that, but they don't care about my equipment, which is theirs. You know, in the end, it's what they're creating everything off of and living and running this restaurant by. But in the end, after that, they even gained more, you know, just wanting to care more about the business itself and the equipment and everything.
So something that I've realized, a quick tip and trick for anyone watching this is, I saw this on LinkedIn the other day, and it's so true. Shout out Rich Ortega. He's founder of On the Rock Services. He mentioned that when service companies, the repair companies, are offering these, some people say preventive maintenance. I actually like to say planned maintenance. That way it's planned out, because you can't technically prevent equipment from breaking down, but you can plan for it.
Yeah.
Right. And
that's
so,
a good way to look at it.
And so planned maintenance, if they're offering these different tiered programs of, do you want your equipment quarter clean, half clean, do you want the full suite of cleaning and maintenance and the coils, all that? At the end of the day, if a service company is nickeling and diming these different tiers, the perception is they don't take 100% pride in their work.
Totally.
Yeah. They're only going to do so much.
The best service companies take pride in what they do, and they don't leave equipment half-assed.
Yeah, exactly. I like that.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you get like a smart TV, and it's like $300 for a 60-inch thing. It's like you're not paying for the TV so much as now you're becoming a product, and they're mining you for data and stuff. And now it's just like that with a shoddy repair. They're kind of counting on something breaking, and then now you're more becoming this little ATM that they're expecting to just keep coming back to, and they're going to bleed you from 1,000 cuts, like kill you from 1,000 cuts kind of thing, rather than you going in and working with someone that's got the integrity to be like, nope, everything's working great. Like, I made sure it's worked, and I can stand by that, instead of some tiered thing of like, well, you didn't get the platinum plan, so I can't come back out. Like, that's a separate charge, and this makes a lot of sense, and where people like trying to save a buck. Yeah. We'll totally get nickel and dimed like that. And
my favorite maintenance guy was, he took pride in it, like completely. It was like his baby. He'd go up to him and be like, all right, but what do we got now going on with you? You know, like almost like a patient. I was like, dude, that's rad.
That's something I've noticed with people that do really good repairs and like that are good handymen and like general contractors like that, especially handymen. That, like you said, like, oh, they take it like it's almost theirs and their baby.
Yeah,
and
it's not
like,
mine. It's
that totally, because I've seen people come in, like come in. They're like, what have you guys been doing to my fucking fryer? It looks like crap. You're not getting, like, though it's like it's theirs. And,
yeah,
like,
you're not taking care of it. That's why you're having these issues.
Yeah, that's
the
kind of thing.
And they'll pull even the cook aside and go, hey, why aren't you this? Javier's calling me because you guys aren't doing this and this and this. I've had that too. I'm like, yeah. That's awesome.
Exactly, right? And they can also go above and beyond.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And when I see these service companies coming into our restaurants too, when you look at the repair versus replace model, so first off, service companies are really great at fixing equipment, getting their hands dirty. But where is all of that data for tracking that equipment for the operators? And so, okay, is this a repair or replace? Well, technically, maybe the service company said, oh, well, you need to replace the equipment. Well, maybe that cost is actually coming from overnight shipping because you need a part ASAP to fix it for the weekend.
Right.
Or maybe those extra fuel charges because you had to hire someone 3 hours away. So that's actually a hidden cost in the repair that's not directly tied to the asset.
Yep.
And so a lot of times restaurant operators have a really tough time understanding what is my true R&M? What's the real cost of this asset versus what is the cost of me going overtime above and beyond the hidden cost, which is forcing me to replace this
and
equipment.
Would you even know that without using a software tool like yours? Probably not.
So exactly. Yeah. And that's the biggest reason we saw a black hole in this industry with data.
So
that's great.
Like what? So yeah, it sounds like you're seeing a lot of these frustrations, especially now, looking back, but, when you were starting repairs, what was like your aha moment? Like,
so rewind, I lived in Italy for a while, and I started a software company with some colleagues for Entrepreneurship Capstone project.
Italy was so bad, he just rushed back to America.
Oh, right. Yeah. Good. Tough life.
You notice he's back. We're in California now. Like, obviously life. Ran for the hills.
I bet. Yeah, you know, eating pasta every day. And, you know, that
it's terrible for your – then you got to hit the gym. You want to relax. Yeah. Go back to California.
I'll tell you what. You know, in a way, you know, all this fresh food in Italy, you have a ton of pasta, but you know what? I was in great shape. Because the food quality is great, and any operator can know that, you know, fresh produce and ingredients from Europe and Italy, it's absolutely phenomenal. So I was in Italy, and I had started this software, you know, project with some friends, and it was like the Home Advisor Angie's List for the Italian market.
When
my dad came out to visit me, we were going to see our cousins in the south of Italy. And we were on a bus together. I was so excited. I was showing him this business plan, you know, classic first time, you know, founder, you know, you're just so juiced up on your idea and you think it's going to be a $1 billion company within a month. So my daddy looked at the business plan. And he said, hey, Ray, you know, this looks great and everything, but why don't you come back to America and build me an app to track my equipment, my repairs and maintenance,
and
do this for the restaurant industry. Because Ray, like, how many times have you had to deal with a broken compressor? You know, how many times have you had to fix that fryer, or how many times that South Bend oven, you know, or any type of manufacturer oven's gone down when you need it most, right?
Yeah.
So it's like this critical piece of equipment that costs so much money has been living in the shadows.
Yeah.
And so really my dad was the inspiration.
Yeah, he niched you. Yeah. That's smart.
Especially, I was about to say,
shout out dad.
Yeah. Great millions in the margin, kind of like example too, taking something we're going in the market trying to be as like in scale like Angie's List or something like that in another country, but then come back like niching yourself, taking advantage of that. And that's something we try to bring to people too, of like, you don't necessarily have to do everything for everybody, but if you can find your niche and take care of people, you can have a great, solid business that has like return business and be the one big player in that space. And I don't know, is that where you kind of, you guys feel?
What's interesting is, you know, that was the initial idea, right? Tracking equipment, sending requests to service providers in the area. We quickly realized that restaurant operators have a million things to do. And tracking equipment and sending requests to a service company, that's not top of mind, especially for mom and pops. Of course, the corporate chains and those facilities managers, they have someone dedicated to track that equipment. Anyone who's watching who's a mom and pop says, well, I don't have time to do this, and I can't pay someone to do it, right? So what we realized is we actually looked at the repair side of things. We want to see, okay, we're curious how they operate. And I remember vividly, we went into an office and we said, hey, why aren't you using repairs to track all of this kind of life cycle of the work order?
Right.
They're like, well, we don't just receive jobs from you. We receive jobs from you, different restaurant equipment portals from all the different chains and the Chili's of the world, the McDonald's, all these different big thousands of assets in these facilities. But not only do we have to get jobs from them, we have to get jobs from manufacturers for warranty.
We were talking about that and tracking the warranties and all that.
So that's coming from the, from the manufacturers, because they don't have the supply networks internal because the service technician field is, there's not enough supply, not enough good people to actually fulfill the demand right now.
Okay.
So not only is it coming from them, but it's also coming from dealers. When a dealer sells that piece of equipment, who's the first person my dad's going to call if that got sold to him? He's going to call the dealer. And the dealer is responsible many times to make sure that their customer service success arm of their company is making sure that that equipment is well taken
care
of.
Yeah, or your dad's never going to buy another piece of equipment from them. That's smart.
Exactly.
So do they track the warranties back then? Were they tracking the warranties, say, for your dad in that example, or how?
So they have to track these different warranties through all these different manufacturer portals.
Okay.
And every manufacturer has a different process. So this is where we started discovering all of this chaos.
Right.
And listen, the restaurant has so much going on their end. But in the service company's defense, there is a lot going on that side of things.
That is crazy. I never even opened
my
mind to
that.
There's
so many layers,
too.
Yeah, there's so many layers.
You wouldn't initially think of, like, from the manufacturer, from, like, because that's one thing we talk about. Like, we're, you know, helping out the individual owners, the small franchisees, like that kind of thing. But then, yeah, you have the McDonald's, the people that are outside of that scope as well, like, putting in their, swinging their around, because like, it's a lot of money. And it's, like, you know, when you have, every town's got to make a D's. Every town's got all these Applebee, like all these.
And you know, you see the In-N-Out, they have their own maintenance trucks. They have, because it does come down to that. I got to the point where I had six locations and they were all spread out. I had to create systems of checking light bulbs, because you end up realizing, no one cares. My cooks are coming in, and do you think they're going to look at that one bulb out and go and replace it?
Checklists are huge.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I started with that, but I could see where that could easily develop into a big hole, going, oh my gosh, on top of every little piece of lights and equipment and warranties and that, that's no employee wants the headache. No, and they shouldn't. That's not their job. I mean, I'm not taking a server or a cook and saying, oh yeah, it's too much. So that's where you guys come in. That's
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many layers. And so for any operators that are watching this, especially mom and pops.
What is your ideal operator? That's like a good thing to throw out there. Who
you know,
are we talking
about? So our primary customer is the service repair company. And the reason why is we sell our software as a service to track every part of their business, from tracking jobs, equipment, all the data, the warranties, integrating these different systems that they have a really hard time with. So we help them focus on what they do really well, which is fixing things.
Yeah.
And they use our software to track all this data so that they can uproot that to the operators. And that's the meaningful part of the value that we provide.
And they look a lot more professional.
Absolutely.
Sending that information to
the
operator.
They send their invoices, their estimates. They're sending equipment information with all that service history. Hey, here's all the different times I've fixed that fryer in the last 5 years. Oh, and by the way, here's your spend. Here's your real spend. Here's your hidden cost spend that we were talking about earlier.
That's nice that you're limited.
Breaking that down. But it's also integrating the manufacturer warranty side versus the aftermarket, right?
Yep.
And so a lot of these service companies, there's so many layers, a lot of double and triple entry on many sides of that equation. Just to give you an example, a service repair company, they take in that job. they have to take in that job, let's say from a restaurant equipment portal. Mm-hmm. They have to double enter it into mm-hmm. their field service software, which now would be repairs because we integrate, but they would have to double enter into their legacy platform or pen and paper. Mm-hmm. They'd go through their process. Afterwards, they'd have to triple enter it back into that portal because they won't get paid unless they actually submit yeah. that payment. Then they have to quadruple enter it into their accounting, typically a QuickBooks. Yeah. Yep. So you get my thing.
Yeah.
And so as a founder, we were so gravitated towards finding the real problem. And the real problem was doing the hardest part first, which is help them be more efficient, provide a software platform that can uproot the data that operators want and they need, frankly. Yep.
Things aren't easy to use. People just won't use them no matter how good they are.
Exactly.
Like you have to streamline those things as much as possible or else the first speed bump, you know. And like it's that you need that equipment to work. And my background's like fine dining. And I've been in spots that have been written up nationally where our main oven is mainly towel storage because
hot storage. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it's somewhere where, you know, we've got, you know, $15,000, $20,000 ovens, nice pieces of equipment using. And then we're using, not using our regular oven on the 6i or whatever burners. Mm-hmm. Because it's just, it's so easy to overlook these things. And it's so like, and all these steps and more of those you can like streamline and like pull out, especially for mom and pops, you know, there's so many, it's your herding cats every single day. And so the things you can do to streamline that, what would you say right now you're looking at it? What's your overall, you think repairs impact on the culinary community?
So chefs, cooks, someone who appreciates keeping track of their equipment, looking at the dollars, definitely appreciates repairs. We have a big vision and frankly, some really exciting product developments that I can't quite speak on yet that will really benefit operators. But at the end of the day, we're doing the work behind the scenes to make the service company more efficient so that the restaurant operators and the chefs and the people that really are watching their spend can understand the costs.
That's actually great how you're saying you break those down.
It's understanding the cost. And so as a restaurant operator watching this, what I would recommend is talk to your service providers about repairs because they're the ones that would buy our software so that you can get better data and track your equipment better.
Yeah, it streamlines the service operator side of things, but then gives you as a restaurant tour transparency.
Absolutely.
And that's what we talk about.
That's
transparency
huge.
Is yes. So good communication, whether it's, you know, with your partner at home, your kids, your employees, your vendors, your partners, but good communication is the key to any relationship.
And you know what? Communication, trust. So another big thing that I've realized over the years is as an operator, I used to complain about, you know, trip charges. Oh, why are you charging me that extra $50-$100 for that fuel charge? But what I've realized is if you put yourself in the mindset of a service provider, they have a list because they are in so much demand to fix equipment.
Yeah.
If you're not paying them well, if you're not paying on time, if you're not doing COD or net 714 and you're not giving them business on a regular basis, where are you going to be? You're going to be the last on their list. And naturally, because they have to be so selective with their work. And so my biggest advice to mom and pops operators is don't try to squeeze your service providers. Really understand that it's a partnership. And that you have to take care of your people because guess what? When you need that oven fixed and you're going to lose $3,000, they'll come if you
That's
take care of them.
That's good advice. They'll treat them like family. They're the ones that are keeping you alive too. They're helping. Yeah.
So how do you build that relationship if, say, you know, you're mom and pop, you're doing the maintenance and you're making sure your stuff's, you know, working. Do you go around with a sledgehammer and break a couple things periodically to get them in the door to say hello? Or how do you keep yourself on the positive end of that list if you're running smoothly, if you're keeping your things? You don't see them as often.
Yeah, so don't pass service providers around like a bottle of Crown.
There you go.
You know, stick to your core people and use them because, you know,
be
what?
Loyal to them. They'll be loyal to you. That's great.
They remember, even if you only use them 2 times a year, they'll remember the both times.
And when the service provider comes to work on that equipment, they're going to know if someone else worked on that.
I've had a guy come through and saw a sticker on an ice machine and he was like, felt like I was cheating on him.
Yep.
That's a good point. Because, and that is where you lose loyalty. You lose him going, Well, if I'm not on top of their list, they're not on top of mine.
Why did that technician put a aftermarket part on a warranty unit? That just voided your entire warranty.
Yeah, now I don't own this and I don't care. Yeah,
so
that's a really good point. Equipment
is really much like a baby for these service providers, and they pay a lot of attention
to what they said earlier. Yeah, it's like they have a sense of ownership of the stuff. And so it is like, why is this other person? This is my fryer I fixed.
Right, I fixed this for 5 years. Why'd you call another dude?
Exactly.
That's a great way, so...
You know, a lot of it's cost. A lot of it's, hey, I need someone now. But if you have a plan, to answer your direct question, you have a plan maintenance program set up, you are naturally setting a reoccurring partnership with that provider.
And that's they can maybe see things like, hey, I know that fridge is leaking Freon, or like it's not holding a temp the way we want. I know because I came here that, you know, in the next 6 months we're probably gonna have a failure there, so I can go ahead and start maybe looking for that part. Because that's a great way.
It's really the compressor.
That is a good way.
It's really the compressor you got to keep an eye on, because if the compressor goes out, that's where the money goes.
Why do you go get doctor checkups? Because they're trying to avoid something you're gonna have down the road. It's almost like that. Keep a good relationship. Have them come in and. I actually would have my repair guy even come in and eat in front, and he would, because it was so close to me. He was so close, and like I was loyal to him.
Yep.
And I was loyal for a lot of years. So he would bring his family on his birthday. He's eating out there. Hey, Javier, come out. I'd go say hello, hang out, and then he would just be like, everything good? It's like, dude, to have a guy who cares about that stuff that no one cares about is great in a restaurant.
Communication is huge. I would also stress that if technicians are just leaving without giving you a debrief or giving one of your employees on site a debrief of what happened, I can't emphasize enough that the soft skills for service technicians isn't always there. It's not a knock on them. It's just they're great at fixing equipment, but there's just something about the DNA of a technician. They don't always have those soft skills to communicate.
Yeah. Well, they don't have to communicate really. Yeah. I mean, with people.
And as an operator, you're kind of left like, oh my gosh, like, did they fix it? Like, what's the bill going to be? And then you get a bill 60 days later because they're so inefficient. Right. Yeah. The best service companies you want to have really efficient software like repairs to manage their business, track the R&M, but also the communication, the trust element is huge.
Yeah.
Those soft skills, I can't emphasize.
And that's where building that relationship too. And like, yeah, just getting that back and forth and like that, you bring up just consistently using the same person, even if you don't have to, and like, having that, just getting that. So
there's a saying that I heard a while ago. I forgot who it was from, but I love this saying. It's part of this motto where, when a technician goes into the restaurant, the oven's broken, the fryer's broken, it's chaos. What's the technician's job? First to fix the customer, then fix the
That's where the recurring business is going to come from. It's not going to come from the oven.
Reassure them that, hey, we're going to take care of this. Fix the customer first before you work on your asset.
Yeah, that's great.
Fantastic. And that's, I think, like we talked about earlier, skills you pull from the service industry into this side of your business, like, and that desire to host and like to have that community, like that relationship of positivity. And like, you're bringing it back there of like,
it's interesting, both sides of the coin.
Yeah, totally. Of like, people want that great experience. If you can give them, this is my favorite restaurant, I come here no matter what experience, doing repair work, whether it's, you know, selling cars, you know, a great car salesman, their whole family keeps coming back to this one person because they feel good about it. And like, if you can do that for, in your business, that's part of the secret sauce. Like it's, word of mouth is one of the strongest things. I always say I'd rather to speak to 100 people that are interested in what I sell than 1,000 people that are ambivalent to it.
Absolutely.
You really kind of hit that with, that just personal service and that, like you said, taking care of the customer service or customer first and then the asset. And like, it's something that if you haven't had to deal with, 30-minute, 45-minute ticket times, a dining room full of angry people, and you have to go there and like turn those frowns upside down. If you haven't had to do that, like it's something that's a skill you just don't have. And the retail and the service or other side of the service, like in those kind of spaces.
Yeah.
Yep. We're in the hardest industry. I mean, definitely by far. I've jumped, after that, I got into tech, I got into other things, and I'm like, this is nothing. And it's hard to explain to people, but it's like, even though the valuations and the companies are bigger and all of that, I'm like, go run a Taco Bell and tell me, then I'll see how good you are. It's a whole nother world. You're literally juggling 20 balls and you got to get good at it. Yep. Yeah. Well, you know, you can't let one drop because that is your entire business. And that you just get really good at any other industry. You do well because it's like, this is nothing. I'm sleeping through this job, you know, like,
yeah, we're cut from the same cloth. Yeah. So I hear you there. Yeah. We get it. Yeah. You know? Yeah. And it's something that is overlooked.
People get it.
So speaking about customers and how to take care of them, what is one of your key marketing strategies for what you guys do?
It's a great question. Yeah. So our industry is very relationship based. So we go to all the trade shows, the associations that are well respected on the service technician side of things. Mm-hmm. We also go to RIFMA, NRA.
So you guys go CRA. To like technician shows and that.
Yeah, absolutely.
At that level, not the restaurant. Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's an easier sell, I would assume.
Yeah. So some of these organizations, CEFESA, the Commercial Food Equipment Service Association, those are some of the most prestigious, large service providers that have been in these local regions for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And a lot of them are generational, right? They pass down from their families, you know, three, four, five different generations. So CEFESA is a great community that we're hooked into. Also the NSC, which is the National Service Cooperative. We are plugged into RIFMA, the restaurant facilities side of things.
You're opening my mind to like associations that I didn't even know existed for maintenance and equipment. That's good.
Oh yeah,
and I'm sure a lot of people listening are going to be like, "What?"
So in the food equipment industry, we actually call it the five families. There's technically six, but there's always been like an inside joke where you have the dealers, you have the reps, you have the manufacturers, you have the service providers, you have the operators. And you have the parts distributors. That's number six.
Yeah.
So actually all of these different industries all work together, but they're so disconnected. To your point, you didn't know that these associations existed, right? And from the operator side, neither did I until I went to the service side.
And you're taking the time to build up your reputation through association with these well-received and like long-time groups and stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's been one of those situations where word of mouth has been huge for us. We don't do any paid advertising. Mm-hmm. We go to trade shows. We make relationships. Mm-hmm. We have a great customer base, right? So, like, we really emphasize how can we provide the most value to our customers. For example, one of our customers in the last 2 years, they made 1.4 million extra in their pocket because of our software.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Because of those efficiencies.
That's a great testimonial.
Another service company went from 3 technicians to 18 technicians in 2.5 years, and we put $1.8 million back into their pocket.
That's awesome.
So we're seeing a huge trend of anywhere from 1 to 2 million ROI back to our customers, the service repair companies, within 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, and our Snow White and the 7 Tips for Restaurant Success, we did a 7-part series, and we highlighted marketing and knowing who your customer is and how to reach out to them directly and where they are in the buying process, so you can set yourself up to be there in front of them when they're ready to pull the trigger. It's super important, and sounds like that's what you guys have done, is like kind of gotten in the head of who are our customers, what are they looking for, and how can we get in front of them in the right time. And like you said, you're not spending money on it. It's physically going out, and we brought up the importance of going to seminars, going into these things, these big networking things where you can also be learning as well, and then also handshake with the people in your space. You don't have to spend a ton to do great marketing and make these relationships.
You know, they always say the best marketing, who's the best marketing? It's your customers.
Yeah.
And so if I would rather have 100 customers that are screaming from the rooftops than have 10,000 customers that are just okay.
Mm-hmm. You want that sense of ownership.
Absolutely.
From your customers and your employees. And it's something that big companies pay millions in HR and training and like, they try to give out perks. I know when I was with Apple, it's like free shirt, free shirt, free shirt, water bottle. Mm-hmm. And like anything they can do to get you hyped about the company because they want you to be the biggest fan, because it just is, like you said, it's the most powerful way to market, is like for a customer to be like, you go here, I'm going to tell you that you don't go anywhere else. Like you go to this Italian, you go to Mama's Meatballs for meatballs only because it's the best one. I'm telling you that. I don't even want to hear you say another word.
Watch out for Nonna Maria.
Yeah. But it's important. It's great stuff. Cause like when you have a friend who's just, you trust your friends, you trust these people. So when they're like vehemently, like, this is the best, you listen to that. And that's who you go to immediately. You don't look
You don't want to lose more money. You don't want to go through the headache. Somebody else has already gone through it and vetted it. Perfect. Tell me.
We're very blessed to have a great customer base. And that's for anyone that is watching, to be super clear, our customers are independent 5, 10, 15, 20 technician teams that are mom and pops, just like the people that are watching this, except they're on the service side. So family-run businesses. We are scaling to larger companies. That's why it's getting pretty exciting. But we focus on mom and pops, and we love to take care of those families.
Yeah.
So when you go to those things and do the handshakes and sit there and meet people directly like that, what would you say the stickiness of those interactions is? How many hands do you have to shake before you're getting another group that wants to bring on repairs software?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we do have a very strong brand in the industry now. Mm-hmm. So I'd say when someone shakes our hand and they come to our booth at the conference, right? Or maybe they come see a demo, or maybe they, go onto our website and book a demo with one of our, account executives or our head of customer experience. These service providers are ready to pull the trigger a lot of times. The reason why is because it's like a POS system in many ways, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm an operator that's been running on Aloha, but all of a sudden I'm looking to switch to a different system, I have to switch all of my different organizational tasks. I have to switch behavior.
Yep.
Change in behavior is the hardest thing.
Yep.
And so in many cases, that's exactly what it's like for a service provider if they come to repairs. So they have to be ready for that change, in many ways.
Yeah, you're about to upend their entire business.
Exactly.
And so now they got a better, maybe it's a better way of doing it. That's just like Cheddar. Maybe it's another better way of doing it.
Yep.
But you still have to sell them on it of like the way you were doing it, it could be better. Mm-hmm. So we're going to rip and replace. And that's a scary thing for a lot of business owners. They built their company on it.
Change
so
management.
It's a scary thing. Like, yep.
Super scary. And
so you got to sell them on that.
Yeah. And that's actually what I've realized over the last 5 years. I try not to sell them anymore. Basically what I do is I let them come to us.
Yeah. They have
because
to sell
they
themselves.
Have to be ready. Yeah. They have to sell themselves. But what we always really dig into is we say, what are your problems? Mm-hmm. What are you currently experiencing? Is it parts inventory? Mm-hmm. Is it just getting your technicians digital and stop writing pen and paper? Is it tracking the equipment more detailed because we're focused on kitchen equipment software? Yeah. So there's so many different problems that they can come to us with. And we don't sell software. We sell problems.
Yeah.
We solve problems.
Yeah, solutions solve all their problems.
We are solutions oriented. Mm-hmm. And so when I go into a demo with actually, even before the demo, I say, what are your problems? And if they don't have any, I say, hey, it's not a good fit because we can't solve your problem.
Yeah, it's better to let them go rather than them hating your product that you're not doing something for them. And it's like, look, it's not a good fit.
They come to us. It's relatively quick, 2 to 4 week sales cycles if they're ready.
Yeah, I say it's always important. Let your reputation enter the room before you do.
Yep.
I'm opening a restaurant locally, and so all we do right now is lots of demos. We do cooking shows. We do like lots of events, and the same thing to build that buzz. And like you're saying, that you're getting into the space, the right spot, not spending, but you're learning as you're building your network, and you're setting identifying your customer, and then hitting them and putting yourself right in front of them, like when they're ready to spend, they're at spaces they want to spend. It's good as a restaurateur. These are tricks that you can take into if you're you don't go to open ice cream spot in Alaska. You go to the beach and sell ice cream where it's hot. And think about that and setting yourself up for success. And it's a trick that, if you're selling burgers or you're selling software, it's a mindset and a way to think that across the board that people can take that lesson and really use it and apply it to themselves and excel.
Mm-hmm. And for the record, for anyone watching this, I never thought I was going to be a software founder.
Yeah,
I don't know about you two. Right?
Nah.
I mean, I was born and raised as a restaurant operator, right? And I'll do it till the day I die. But at the end of the day, we are mission driven. Mm-hmm. We want to leave this industry better than how we found
it.
Exactly. And technology is that next step.
Yeah,
and fortunately for us, we found our path there.
That's what my grandfather said. He's like, look, I love that you're doing restaurants. That's what I did. Your dad, like, great. You guys are doing this. But what is your generation doing? What is your thing? Because you could be helping the industry in a different way.
Exactly.
And you guys are it. You get it. And so that's where we, come up with this, which you nailed a need. And it sounds like it's only going to keep growing.
There's public traded companies that are aggressively trying to make sure that we live in a space that doesn't have anything except for big brand stuff. They're trying to push out the mom and pop, so they need every tool they can to fight back and like stay as liquidly cash liquid as possible. How to keep those like have just every tool they can in their bag, and like so these kind of things are great to have, like to give the people providing service an extra step, provide transparency to the customer. Yeah, lots of spaces where you can benefit.
To your point, just real quickly, you made a great point there with talking about generations, and there's a lot of baby boomers in the service side, a lot of baby boomers on the operator side too. My dad, you know, my dad's 70 years old, built restaurants for the last 38 years. And so what we're noticing as of recently is these large conglomerates on the service side, these larger conglomerates, these service technicians are starting to go out on their own. These 20, 30, 40-year-olds that have been training for the last 5, 10, 15 years for these larger conglomerates, and they're starting to realize that they can do it on their own.
Yeah, they go build their own little...
So there's a huge generational shift going on right now. I'd like to think I'm very optimistic about service technicians, and right now in the market, it's tough for operators. Yeah. There's not enough quality technicians to fix the equipment in the timely manner that you want it to be fixed in. That is a huge point. I can't emphasize that enough. I understand the pain points. Everyone on this, you know, watching this podcast probably thinking, oh my gosh, like, Ray, like a software's not going to solve me getting my equipment fixed in 15 minutes. Absolutely right. But what it can solve is solving that generational gap.
Yeah. And like you're saying, I had no clue about tracking the warranties and this and this and this. At the point I needed it fixed, I just needed it fixed. $500, I don't care. Just come in, get it done. When you're saying, look at the percentage that actually goes out the door, which doesn't have to. And look at the amount of like, you know, return you've already given the big brands or the other companies, you know, that are using you. So yeah, it just makes sense. And the way everything's going, it's just getting more expensive. So I mean, I would tell every repair company that services mom and pop restaurants, the mom and pop locations are looking for this kind of reporting, this kind of transparency, this kind of repair also out of their small local repair people.
And they don't want to do the work to find it.
No, they're not going to.
Let the service provider, let the software work for the service provider so that you can get what you need.
Yeah, so bolster your company, give them that kind of information. You're only going to get more word of mouth, more customers, because that's how the restaurant industry people talk. If you're happy, they're going to say, hey, look at the reports I get. Look at the money I saved this year. Use them. They're using repairs. Their company's going to grow.
And I think, like you said, like coming from that, the baby boomer generation, the generation that, you know, had, there's a little bit of like, I think of next generation that's, things aren't going to be the same as they are right now. I think that when a burger at McDonald's and these fast food spots are costing $14, $15, and there's mom and pops that can sell you the same product, opening up great software like Cheddar Suite to make it easier for these mom and pops to operate, repairs to make streamlines so their equipment's working, the people that have better relationships with the operators. But things that give the smaller places the tools to operate in the bigger like style. Because the customers, they're going to get to a point when baby boom generation, the people at the very top right now, they're going to keep telling us that it's only going this way. It's big. The big corporations are going this way, and they're going this way. And they're the ones that have the biggest loudspeaker right now to be saying that. But that doesn't mean it's true. And that doesn't mean that
we're in a new world. They don't understand.
People aren't going to keep paying crazy amounts for these things. And then when they're getting the service, they're not going to go to McDonald's and give nothing but kiosks and an empty counter and stuff, like to where they can't interact with anyone and still pay for what they're if they went to a sit down spot where, you know, someone that they can have, like we said, like favorite restaurant experience for their afternoon burger, their lunch and stuff like that. So there is, I think, with businesses like repairs, with Cheddar Suite, these tools, these things are like the kindling. I think that'll help spark that big fire, that the cleansing fire that's going to, because a lot of people, they're getting to the point where they only have, you know, two nickels to, or two pennies to rub together and trying to make it 10 cents. Like, yeah. That's not how math works. So, like, there is, I think, a big change in the whole industry. And it's tools like what those things are that facilitate that and that are going to help. And I don't think it'd be quick or whatever, but I think it is going to be kind of a change. And people are, I think these big companies and these, like, older generations that are just like, no, this is the way it is. Just accept it. Get that. They're not hearing. They don't have the ear to the ground. They're not hearing the hoofbeats of big stampede coming through.
Yeah,
that's
mom and pop getting swallowed up because they can't compete with the big corporate because they're all set up for success.
Yeah, but those big corporate ones, they're gonna keep resting on their laurels of like it's supposed to be like this and we're supposed to. And I think it's set up to like with the tools that are available now, these mom and pops and stuff are gonna be able to like. And I think that's compete, the stampede that's coming through. That's gonna blow through. You look at we're in San Luis Obispo. Places of Applebee's and stuff like that have tried to open here and they don't do well because the local population doesn't want it. Yeah. And that attitude is going to spread to more and more places as fiscally, like, if they have to spend more on par or more than what they can get at this good spot, and then they're not having good gut health, they're not happy with what they're spending, their kids are having obesity issues, diabetes, and stuff like that. And it's like, dude, I'm not going to let these people poison me. Mm-hmm. These great tools that we have now are going to let this new generation come run through.
Well, to your point, these baby boomers, you know, they have the mouthpiece. They have the stand right now. But what are we doing right now? You know, you guys are taking a stand, and that's why Restaurant Unconfidential is here, right? Mm-hmm. Because this is the platform where this is the voice for the future, and this is the voice that we all want to educate people on, right?
Yeah.
And so these are type of situations I love to be a part of, and you know, congrats to you guys for starting this because the baby boomers are getting diluted, and hey, no disrespect to baby boomers, I love all you guys out there.
Mentors and stuff, and gave me the tips and tricks I need.
I've had so many
exactly.
great mentors, right? And they have so much wisdom, but at the end of the day, there comes a time when you have to pass the baton. And that baton is Restaurant Unconfidential and many other platforms that are speaking for the next generation.
Yeah, good point.
So kudos to you guys.
Thank you so much. So what's next for Repairs? What's now we've talked
growth.
About where you came from. We've talked about how you got here. Now,
you're saying
where
bigger,
are you going?
Bigger. Yeah, where are you guys taking this? You were saying bigger.
Growth. That's our main focus. We have a core customer base across the nation and in Canada. So we're really getting a strong service provider network across the nation. The next step is verticalization. So we are the only commercial kitchen repair software built for the food equipment industry. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is there's many other software tools that can help repair companies manage their business. Like, it's not this new idea. Like, field service dispatch software, it's been around for so long, right? Mm-hmm. It's been around in so many different industries. But when you look at what we do really, really well, is there's so many complexities, nuances that a restaurant equipment repair company has to deal with. Mm-hmm. Exactly what we were talking about earlier with all the five families, the six families that are involved. We are verticalizing and integrating all these different ecosystems so it all leads its way back to the service provider. So interconnecting that data is huge. From the manufacturer side, from the aftermarket side of things. Like I said earlier, this industry is such a black hole of equipment data.
Yeah. And everything. Yeah. Like, you guys are just hitting on one, but the more we do this podcast, the more we talk to restaurant owners, the more we dig into this, it's like,
it's crazy.
It's sad that it's so massive, but yet no one is trying to work on it. But if you think about it, it's because 70-80% are mom and pop. They have 1 to 5 locations. Mm-hmm. It's just so segmented and broken.
It's tough.
There's not, you know, and the big players at the top, they're corporations where they're not going to, they don't care about the mom and pop.
They're taking advantage of them
and saying, I have better equipment.
It's the same exact thing on the service side.
Exactly. Yep.
A DOS-based point-of-sale system that's costing you thousands and thousands of dollars is okay when it's 24 right now. But it hasn't been 10 years that, you know, the iPad was out for, you know, half a decade before it got integrated into point of sales to where just a simple software could be added to it. And it's people at the top getting very rich and keeping those dollaroos from spreading out to the rest of us. And so that's how you pay, you know, your people. You don't shut down your counter and put up kiosks just because someone's asking you to pay $15, $20 an hour to your employees when you're one of the largest restaurant companies and real estate companies in the world, McDonald's. Yeah, so that's the stuff's out there. So we talk about where you're going in the future. Here's a question I have. What do you think about the right to repair legislation, and how do you think that's impacting you guys' industry specifically?
So wait, do you want to describe that? Because
right to repair. So like right now, if you have a Tesla and you try to fix it yourself, it bricks your supercharging ability. John Deere is the main crux of this bill that's going in, because John Deere tractors, if you don't take it to John Deere to get fixed, they have no way to fix it and work on your tractor. These are farmers that are spending $100,000+ on these giant tractors and pieces of equipment.
So they want to own it the whole way through, not even
you buy the whole product. So why? And so the EU doesn't, they've been way ahead of this, but it goes on. If your iPhone breaks, you should be able to fix it, put the screen in, like everything across the board should be made to be
you own it.
Repairable. Exactly. You should be able to. So like,
that's a great question.
Yeah.
That's a great question. So,
because it breaks your warranty a lot of times.
I'll break it down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's insane. And does it break your warranty, or are they telling you it breaks your warranty? Because I know that, like, the just because there's a sticker on the bottom of your VCR going back in the day, but a DVD player, a PlayStation, or something like that says like void warranty if like this is broken. Because that sticker's there doesn't mean that that's true.
So Ray, what do you find? How are you finding that? Yeah.
Yeah, this is a interesting, sensitive, fragile topic, but I typically will always side with the OEMs, and I'm going to break it down. So in the food equipment industry, there are so many different brands, so many different manufacturers, fryers, ovens, you name it, coolers, refrigerators. There's so many, hundreds and hundreds, thousands of different manufacturers. They all have what we call ASAs, authorized service networks, right? So it's like, it's one of those situations where these authorized agents are trained and certified to fix that specific brand of equipment, because there's so many different nuances with all these different brands, and there's so many, which makes it really complicated. And so you see the market split up in a couple different ways. You know, there's the ASAs of the world, the authorized service agents, and then there's the really what we call them, some people might not like this, but the trunk slammers, the ones that kind of just, you know, hey, I got a buddy that will fix, you know, your fryer, you know, and it's going to be dirt cheap.
I got a guy, guys.
I got a guy.
Yeah.
Right? I got a guy. Don't trust that guy. Yeah. I'm sure he's great, but you know what? Find out in a couple of weeks when your oven's broken again. Or when another authorized service agent goes in to see what the hell's happening.
Yeah.
Right? So in the OEM manufacturer warranty's defense, if that equipment does break down, they want their authorized agents that have been trained on that equipment to go out. And if you're putting different parts that aren't OEM certified, where does that lead back to? That leads back to the manufacturer's fault, because it's their job to make sure that their equipment is in pristine condition and according to their standards. Now, it gets complicated, though, because different manufacturers have different ways of certifying an authorized service agent. And so some are extremely stringent, some are not. And then some are choosing one service provider in that region, some are choosing five in that
region. Some might be paying just to get on that list.
And so what we actually find many times is service, and I don't know how the OEMs will think about this, but service providers a lot of times are starting to realize that they're not making money for warranty.
Yeah.
They're actually getting squeezed. And so they're expecting to go below market rates and below street rates to go fix a fryer 5 hours away.
Yeah,
they're actually losing money. So there's a ton of money to be said in the aftermarket. However, because there's so many different OEMs in the space and so many different brands of equipment, there has to be some sort of control. on what is the right way to fix that.
So my
that's really good response
to that, because you brought up the fact that there's a supply issue of providers, service providers. Yep. And so there's not enough service providers to hit as many. So that's what drives up prices of repairs, supply and demand, obviously.
Yeah.
So if we keep it more like OEM specific to everything, doesn't that keep the supply of service providers lower by not opening up that?
I see a lot of service companies doing aftermarket. Mm-hmm. Because, for example, if I'm an operator, mom and pop shop on a busy Friday night, okay, I can wait for a warranty service provider 2 days later. Oh, they're going to be here the next day. Well, that doesn't help me because I'm going to lose $4,000 tonight.
Yeah.
So it's like us restaurant operators have to decide, okay, do I have to break this warranty right now and call my go-to aftermarket guy because I know he can fix everything in my restaurant? Yeah. Am I going to sacrifice losing the $4,000, or am I going to keep this warranty on like a what if, like this black box of what I know, what I don't know I'll lose in the future? So it actually ties back to the operator having to make that final decision.
Yeah.
Do I break this warranty, and is it worth my ROI to call out my main guy?
Yeah.
Right.
And so part of right to repair too. So if we look at our iPhones right now, and you say there's so many little technical differences in all these pieces of equipment. If you look at iPhones now, going off of the EU, already having the right to repair and these things, part of that is the charger. So you're going from a proprietary lightning cable, DAF charger, to a USB-C. Do you see a lot of that kind of stuff in the restaurant industry with equipment, where is proprietary there to make it so it's, you know, only this guy can work on it and this guy isn't qualified for it? Or is it there because it's actually providing it's making that product better?
Well, you know, the best OEM manufacturers pay their service providers well, and they also have a really sound support, and they build their equipment with intention that it will inevitably break, right? There's a lot of engineers that are great at building things, but how are they thinking about the aftermarket service of that equipment?
Right.
Sometimes engineers never think their stuff's
going to
break.
Yeah, no, it's not going to be.
That's
and mechanics
typical.
And engineer, like mechanics are always in the same things. Like, why did the engineer designer make it like this? Why?
So, you know, the tough but real answer there is the OEMs have to be in charge of their own destiny, and they have to be intentional about the service networks they bring in, but also about their infrastructure of how they value their service network and how they value the maintenance of their equipment. Because if I am the OEM manufacturer and I sell that equipment to these distributors that are selling my equipment, what happens if my dad or your dad or anyone on a busy Friday night, okay, that oven breaks down, I can't get a warranty service provider for this specific brand, I am never buying this brand again for service warranty.
It starts ruining your
the reoccurring loyalty of getting more business with that OEM brand.
In the end, it fixes itself. You're right. If a company isn't calling out and getting a good network and building that side of it up, and you're losing money, I'm never buying that.
The service network is just as important, if not more important, than actually the selling and acquisition of that equipment.
Yeah.
Because my dad will run an oven into the ground for 40 years, but I guarantee he's going to need to replace a lot of equipment in his facility. My dad has, you know, small open bistro kitchens, but I counted in our smallest restaurant, we had 30 pieces of equipment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about loyalty with service providers and keeping your main people. I highly recommend vetting strong aftermarket service companies, but if they have ASA and warranty relationships, that's huge. But let's be real here. Mm-hmm. The real ASAs, the reason why a lot of these service technicians become ASAs is so they can get their foot in the door with the big chains.
Yeah.
And the big clientele. Yes, you know,
they haven't built up, obviously, on their own, some big network. They got to join one to be part.
Gets their foot in the door, and then hey, can you also fix this while you're here? Can you also fix my walk-in cooler while you're here? So it gets them in the door with this bigger business. But at the end of the day, small business is a great place to be. Diversifying is great for a service company. I mean, when COVID happened, a lot of our customers were diversified. They worked in grocery stores. They worked in hospitals. Mm-hmm. They worked in hotels. They worked in, grocery stores were booming during COVID. I mean, it was crazy. Mm-hmm. The equipment was being used and abused. But going back to the core part of it, it really comes down to the partnership between the service repair company and the manufacturer. And then inevitably, the operator is going to have to make the final decision on what is going to be the best ROI in the time of need. Mm-hmm. And if the service service provider can provide it and he has the skill sets and he's certified, great. Mm-hmm. And, but if the OEM can't provide a service provider on in the timely manner, that's on them.
Yeah. That's good to know. And then, you see with like airlines right now, if you can't get someone on the seat that they paid for, you have to give full refunds and provide that seat. And so maybe that's something you see, maybe keep the OEM service and stuff. But if you're not able, like we need, you know, to expect to see parts delivered in a window, there should be some sort of like network and some pushback too for the customer side, maybe to kind of like how you see with airlines of just like how now it's a new thing to if you can't get on there. So same thing with them, like kind of just things that kind of help with the customer side too, like help like
It's not all one-sided.
Also like encourage them to like make sure like help build that network too, like to get more of those. That's what I see with right to repair is more uniformity in parts and then training on those parts and stuff. So you start seeing more of the same technology in spaces where it can be, where there are what the we call like industry standards, like using like the
that
USB-C
would be amazing.
As
that's
like the
utopia.
Yeah.
That's the utopia. The sheer reality right now is there's two large conglomerates that own a lot of the different brands in the food equipment industry, but many of those brands underneath those organizations, they all run autonomous.
Yeah.
So which creates that fragmentation, those processes that you're talking about, they're not uniform.
Yeah.
And that's what creates that huge complexity for the double and triple entry for the technicians in the field. And then the operators suffer because of it. It's a never ending battle, you know, hey,
it's super interesting things like way to think about it though. Like, cause it isn't just a, right or wrong or any, like there's so many factors that go into it. And like you said, the restaurant owner at the end of the day, cause if you have a guy that, you know, is killer and you trust you, if you build those relationships, then you can more confidently make that choice of like, no, if it voids a warranty, I don't care. Get it done tonight versus. And so you are more informed. And so you have like we always say, as many tools in your tool bag as possible.
And as the operator, my advice to any operators out there is if you know that you're going to be replacing a lot of your older equipment with new equipment, and maybe you have your eyes set on a couple key brand manufacturers, sit down with your service company, and hopefully the service company approaches you to talk about a 5-10 year plan with them, and talk about, hey, here's all the equipment that's going to be coming in that's new. You're my people.
Yeah, that's great. Look at him like an employee that you're keeping on. Yeah,
you know, would you be interested in getting certified with these manufacturers? Because our relationship is so strong, I'd hate to go outside the bounds of this relationship if you're not certified.
Yeah, and at least you're giving a heads up if you do use somebody else, because of that, you've already communicated it up front.
And
I like that.
You're bringing up something. Yeah. Javier has actually talked about this with Taco and Latin Spot, and bringing in chicken and getting a deal locked in a low price. Yep. And so even just like reaching out to Hormel and saying, what's the best price I can get? You know, if I need to put a logo on my menu, if or whatever I got to do, going out to Dos Equis or Rockstar to get branding and stuff, and reaching out and asking and being confident enough to ask. And the same thing when you're talking about with purchasing equipment, like looking at it in a group and say, okay, I'm going to buy a stove or refrigerator, I'm expanding catering. I'm about to get all this other equipment for that. Like, I'm about to spend, you know, 50 grand. Mm-hmm. What can you do to either give me 60 grand's worth of equipment with that 50 grand, or how can you help me turn that into 40 grand of spend or something? Where can we work as a team and being confident to ask those things? So it's something that you brought up previously that I think that you're bringing up, that it's another just across the board kind of lesson of like, ask. Don't be afraid to ask. And
people don't think they have that power. People don't think they have that. You're buying a car. You're buying a car, $60,000 car.
Expensive equipment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You get a combi oven.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's like, and you do have, the leverage to be able to go in.
That's a great way. People, I don't think, I mean, I don't necessarily think, I always think of that. Like, think about that same thing of like, umbrellas for the patio, getting them from Coca-Cola, but also like it totally works with like Vulcan. Like I want, you know, I want all Vulcan stuff because I know it's kills. Like, so like I was going to buy this, you know, drop ship stuff from China, but like, let me, what can you, here's the, what I was going to spend on that. What can you do to help me get there?
A lot of this equipment is getting really high tech too. So, so all of this newer equipment coming in, like if you're dealing with a big combi oven, there's so many new complexities that you need to be trained on.
Yeah, you're not going to get a any local repair.
So we had all those at Apple, and it's so easy to destroy one of those if you don't know how to use it.
So just keep in mind, as if you're an operator, your strategy also depends on what type of food you're cooking and what type of equipment you're using. Mm-hmm. If you're using, you know, run of the mill, you know, 6-burner, 8-burner ovens, okay, then we can figure out some other strategies. You have more, you have more options.
Right.
But the last thing you want is Joe Schmo fixing your $50,000 to $60,000 combi oven.
Yeah.
Which have basically computer boards, motherboards in there, broilers, so many different things are going on inside that box.
It's definitely dependent on your equipment and your strategy. So
and that's proprietary. It's proprietary tech that's also there for a reason. So I can totally understand when you go back and say the OEM and having those people in that system. Because I've had that experience of having to replace, you know, motherboards on $40,000 Rationale like combi ovens and having to go back and then do that multiple times because they didn't set up the hard water right, and so we're not pulling out the hard water, we don't have a water softener, it's going in there destroying the boiler by all the calcified like minerals in there, that heat is then in turn destroying the motherboards, and if you don't have the right people in there doing the right repairs and know to look for these things, because that's why we had to do 2 motherboards in one of those oven sets, because they didn't have the soft water and because the guy didn't know to look for that, and that's something that would have maybe been brought up, and
you wouldn't even have thought of thinking of that unless you've already come across that or you're trained to look for that. But you're right, you're not gonna get a local repair guy to understand any of that.
It is a lot of it's a complex and in different situations call for different answers to that.
Encourage your service technicians and operators to look into CEFESA and the National Service Cooperative. CEFESA is really the association that trains for
let's put that on our site so people can find it.
They're a great organization. They've been around a long time, but if you have that CEFESA patch, if you're a service technician, that means something.
So wrapping up, leave our guests with what are say 5, let's run with 3 quick tips in the kitchen to set them up for keeping that equipment there as long as possible.
Repair success.
So the first that I believe trumps it all is partnership and trust.
That was a good one.
Having that true partnership, and don't complain about fuel charges. Don't complain about the markups on parts. That's how they make their money.
Yeah.
So just trust your service provider to do the job and be loyal. That's my first tip. Mm-hmm. My second tip is plan maintenance. Have a plan for your equipment. If you don't have a plan, speak with your local service provider. Speak to the dealers in your area, the manufacturers. Talk to your local restaurant operators that are buddies right down the street from you. You know, really understand what your equipment spend looks like. And then the third one is tell your service providers to join repairs.
That's great.
Hell yeah.
Ray, you nailed it. This has been good. You got a lot of good info.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming out.
Yeah, like, appreciate it, guys.
So
appreciate
many
it.
Fun so things, fun. Like yeah. yeah, to like and like new perspectives to look at things.
A lot of
like,
good insight.
Yeah, yeah.
In a world I mean, I spent a lot of money on. I didn't had no clue it was that big. Mm. Yeah. When it comes down to all the
Yeah, and just seeing like so many tips and tricks across the board. Yeah. So yeah, we're super stoked to have you on. Like I said, it's great to see these tools out here that are helping restaurants succeed. That's what our whole existence is, to see more restaurants stay open as long as possible.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
Stay hopping.
We'll link everything and people can find you. So we'll
check
sure.
online on the wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube, wherever you find this in the descriptions or check out our website, yeschef.productions, and we'll have links for everything, all the stuff you've been mentioning, use repairs, look at these associations, get out there, go to one of the shows. It's never like we said before, it's never a bad thing to go to a tradie, go to a show, and go out, shake hands. that's a great way to get deals too. Talk to someone that's out there, like at the shows. That's a great way to lock in a great price on a new piece of equipment. Talk to the guy in charge that's at the top. Skip the middleman.
Well, thanks for having me on. Right on. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Well, that's us with Kitchen Confidential. We'll see you next time with our ongoing series, Where to Spend.